My name is Dale, and I'm on death row in Idaho. I spoke with you once before.
Yes, I remember that.
I actually have a question for your guests, either Scott or Evan. What is the difference between DNA profile and actual DNA match?
Well, the DNA profile is the profile of one specific individual, whether it be me or you or someone else. It's one specific profile of a person. The match is when they take that profile and match it to a profile from a case, from an unknown source of DNA that was found somewhere.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask that is it's my case, and as I mentioned, I'm on death row, is so new that the Innocence Project hasn't even become involved yet because I've not even had any appeals or anything. But Court TV, I know when I had watched it before, does get involved. How would someone contact Court TV, or how much involvement do they have in deciding whether or not they'll look into a case?
We get involved when the Innocence Project does get involved, or we get involved. We have a series called The Wrong Man, where we look at cases that have been taken up by an investigator, and sometimes in those cases we lend a hand by providing an investigative reporter ourselves. I know that it's not the easiest thing in the world to hear, but the Innocence Project has so far freed 136 inmates who are facing death in this country, and so they're getting as fast as they can to as many cases as they can. My sincerest advice to you is to go. You can go to theinnocenceproject.org if you have access to a computer there, or have someone who can get you access to it, and get your case on their radar screen, because they take a lot of donations. They raise a lot of money to get lawyers in the field who donate their time to help wrongly convicted people who face death in this country, which is an enormous number of people.
Dale, tell us again to what you were convicted of exactly.
I was convicted of capital murder, 2 counts, one count of conspiracy to commit murder, 1 count of arson, and 1 count of conspiracy to commit arson. And right now I'm in Boise, Idaho, and I'm at the prison, the maximum security institution in Boise, and I'm actually sitting right now in my cell on death row.
May I ask what the evidence was was there a DNA that put you at the scene?
Actually, there was DNA that was found at the scene, and one of the officers who testified stated that he did not recover any DNA. We've since found that there was some recovered. It does not match that of either of the victims, and I'm trying to get him to try to match my DNA to it, because I know I wasn't there, and I can't get anyone to even check my DNA against the evidence that was recovered at the scene.
What kind of a crime murder scene was it, Dale? What happened?
Well, what came out of trial was that it was my ex-wife, who was a prosecutor in the state of Missouri. Her and her boyfriend were found shot with her own sidearm, pistol, in northern Idaho. Both bodies had been burned beyond recognition, and it was her garage where the bodies were found. And I lived in the area. I lived a quarter mile away. We were both up in northern Idaho on vacation at the time, so that's pretty much it. The identity of the bodies was confirmed, at least with my ex-wife, by one tooth.
So, when it happened, did you realize that you were going to be the suspect?
Well, I realized it because I've worked in law offices and law libraries for a long time, and I know that ex-spouses are generally looked at as a primary suspect.
Sure.
It was 9 months after the recovery of the bodies or the determination of death that I was arrested. So it wasn't like I was arrested the next day. I went through a grand jury and that sort of thing. So.
All right. Did they let you freely make phone calls, by the way, where you are?
Actually, death row has a collect call only telephone in the cell. And we can make, as inmates, we can make calls, but death row has a little bit more due to the nature of needing access to attorneys and that sort of thing. So we do have a little bit more than the average inmate, but typically it's just a collect call only. We can't receive calls or make crank calls or anything.
All right. Well, good luck to you, Dale.
Well, thank you very much.
And I say good luck because I don't know if he's guilty or not. The evidence obviously showed that he was, but who knows sometimes.
Well, the cool thing is, or the not cool, but the interesting thing, and I think that the crux of why, you know, people are so fascinated by this and why, you know, it still lingers in our public consciousness so much is that years after something happens, the science catches up with the evidence.
Yeah, it's
and
like it doesn't go away.
Suddenly the whole, everything goes out the window.
And that always seems to happen, and there's always an evolution of the science, and it's always being improved.
I mean, this makes me sound like the movie The Fugitive in this guy's particular case.
Yeah.
And obviously he's going to be the prime suspect when his ex-wife and her boyfriend are found murdered, charred bodies and everything else, and it happens where he lives, in that area.
Unfortunately, you know, the first suspect and many times the ultimate suspect in a case, you know, regarding something like this is the spouse. It's the person who, you know, is the first person of interest, and that's where sometimes investigators focus, and then years later they find out that something perhaps was not as they thought. We actually have a premiere tonight, or, you know, on Wednesday night, that has to do exactly with that. You know, somebody was supposed to have gotten away with the perfect crime, so to speak, and 4 years after that, forensic scientists turn up a piece of evidence that kind of turns the whole thing
over. It's almost evident as if there's really not a perfect crime. I mean, they find a little thread, a hair from something that was in a carpet, and they're able to identify it or trace it back to where it was made. And then someone says, yeah, here's the bill, and it went to so-and-so, and so-and-so ends up being the suspect they convict.
Well, the day I was in Scott's classroom when he was teaching our curriculum, he started the whole class off by talking about the sniper case, and this is, I think, before it necessarily was even, you know, the suspects were in hand.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to turn on the fingerprint on a piece of paper in I think it was in Georgia, where one of the crimes was supposed to happen, and then a fingerprint on a shell casing in the D.C. area. You know, two fingerprints, you know, 600-700 miles away from each other. That was the ultimate piece of physical evidence that, you know, put all the crimes together, and will probably put these guys both away.
And that's what you find happening. You find all these little tiny pieces, and that's what intrigues a lot of my students, is that they try to come up after 6 months in the class with a perfect crime, and they can't do it because they always find some little piece that would be left behind, or something that they would be able to pick up, or something that would be able to be located.